to Writers on Craft. I'm Suzanne LeGrand, and today I'm speaking with Ted Katz, author of The Studio Within. So where do you begin when you don't know where to begin?
Well, there was an exhibition many years ago on creativity, and these were some of what the people who put it up decided were characteristics of the creative temperament. So when I was called a creative child, I didn't know what that meant, because other friends were going to be, who knows, a priest, a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse, or whatever they were going to be. What in the world does a creative child be? And I don't think my parents knew any better than I did. I think my mother instinctively knew that you leave a creative child become. I think my father was just not comfortable with it, kind of as you were getting to, I think. This is what they came up with. These are the characteristics of creative people. They challenge assumptions. It's daring to question what most people take as truth. I would question something, and a teacher may either disagree or not have the time to get into that, may say, why don't you read this or that, whatever. Anyway, challenging assumptions. I've done it. They recognize patterns. So recognizing patterns is perceiving significant similarities or differences in ideas, events, or physical phenomena. Lloyd knew when he brought me out to New Mexico that I would spend some time just being there and come back and say, these are your hotspots. And these are, and I'd say, why didn't, it's so obvious, but it isn't to everybody. I like doing that. I enjoy it. The difficult thing, of course, is then what do you do with that, which is also getting lost again. They see in new ways. Seeing the commonplace with new perceptions and transforming the familiar to the strange and the strange to the familiar. They make connections, bringing together seemingly unrelated ideas, objects, or events in a way that leads to a new concept. They take risks, daring to try new ways with no control over the outcome, and they take advantage of chance. They grab it. They do something with it. They move with it. And many, many artists have done that. I have so many examples that I pull out of books. Oh, Francis Bacon was one, but there are others who have to get lost, who have to find themselves unable to move forward. And then there's something very exciting and very challenging about working your way out of that. But I want to point out that that's a temperament that doesn't fit all sizes.
You wrote this great phrase. You said, in describing this book, rich discoveries come from being lost. I think a lot of people are very afraid of being lost.
Of course they are.
It is terrifying.
As an administrator, I worked with many, many people, but you know, not everybody really wants to be lost. And I would often give people all the freedom they complained they didn't have. And I was surprised to find that many of them, it wasn't that they couldn't handle it, they didn't like it when they had it. There's a lot of responsibility, and there are a whole different set of pressures that come with that.
Could you describe a little bit of those difficulties or pressures of being lost?
Well, yeah. Picasso said, I have a postcard someone sent me once. He said, I don't seek, I find. Well, I guess getting found implies being lost. And as a creator, you are constantly looking to upset the wagon.
Can creativity be taught, or is it a matter of allowing this temperament to be expressed and creating a context for it to be expressed?
Maybe all of those things and more. I think one of the things that led me in some of the directions I took was that I liked teaching. I liked the students I worked with, and it turned out that they were often difficult students. So people began to know that I could do that or would do that, and I enjoyed doing that. Eventually, that led to administrative positions, and that led to grants from foundations, and suddenly I was moving into huge things, institutions. when I really most wanted to be with students in a classroom. But then again, that was a challenge. And because I'm an iconoclast, and I guess by nature, I guess the word is out that you don't bring him into an institution and keep him there, he'll be trouble. And it takes a while to figure that out, too. So what do you do if you're trouble to survive, and more than survive, to make your life rich and interesting?
I'm curious, though, how you have been able to both pursue full-time teaching jobs, and also you've been painting and doing art mm-hmm. your whole life. A lot of people find it hard to figure out how to do both. Any thoughts about how you were able to both maintain a career and also be a productive artist?
I have a very good friend who talked about being a writer, but had to work. And so he loved buying Mont Blanc pens and all the right stuff and beautiful paper and sometimes a light kerosene lamp or a candle or whatever. And one day I said to him, I'll just pick a name. I said, you know, John, I said, my friend Wanda in North Carolina was roaming in her old family cemetery, which goes back, I think, to the 18th century. And she called me up one day and she said, Ted, you will love this. She said, I came across an old stone and said, here lies Jane Smith. She'd done what she could. And so I said to John, John is going to say, here lies John. He didn't write. Well, we didn't talk for some time after that. I said, there's nothing wrong with that, but do it or don't do it. There are so many examples of people who had full-time jobs, raised families, did all the things other people use as excuses. I think, and I don't mean to be glib, but I really think we do what we have to do. And sometimes we deceive ourselves. I have as well, where you find excuses because you really don't want to do that. Writing is a lot of work. I mean, I'll sometimes think, I've been sitting here for 5 days. I came out with 2 sentences. Nobody told me that this writing, a quote, a book, whatever this is, was going to do that. And I know it from other things that I've done. Why do I do it? It surprised me. It snuck up on me. I just love to do it. But no more than I love teaching or love... uncapping a tube of paint and seeing it poke its little head out of there and thinking, well, look at you. Wow, cadmium red light, aren't we hot stuff? Let's see what we can do. I mean, it's like William James, the philosopher's sister, said, my brother is born afresh every morning.
You know, writers oftentimes have writing groups, which, among other things, give them a sense of community mm-hmm. and also accountability in terms of helping work move forward. And I'm wondering if you would talk a little bit about the relationship you see between creative endeavors that you've engaged in and community. Do you find that having some sort of collective or group or reference has been helpful to you?
In that list I gave you of creative people, what they do, what activities, they construct networks. Constructing networks is forming associations between people for an exchange of ideas, perceptions, questions, and encouragement. Of course, we do that. We need that.
So how do you do that in your life?
Friends, museums, reading, I'll have 3 or 4 books going. One is audio. When I walk, I'm doing one book. I'll have another one on Kindle. I'll have another one that I just like to touch because of the paper feel. I feel blessed with some wonderful friends. Most of them are not artists. I've always been sort of anti-ghetto, any kind of ghetto. I like a mix of people. I find that I love the exchange. So I think that's important. I don't think I've ever belonged to a painter's group or a writer's group per se. I don't think there's any reason why. I just never have. And I guess I'm kind of a loner. It takes a lot of time and a lot of being alone. These paintings don't paint themselves. And books don't write themselves. And When I moved out of the Pearl, where I oversaw a studio with 10 artists in residence, so we were a community, absolutely. They were people that I had taught here and there around town, and one of the women wanted to spend the summer with her daughter. And she said, would you take my space so I can keep it for the summer? And I said, sure. When she came back, she decided she wanted to go out of it, and they were a women's group, and they were going out. And that building was being sold. And there was that whole second floor right on top of Fuller's Coffee Shop down in the Pearl. And I came in and talked to them, and I wanted the all 4,500 square feet up there with two exposures, and they were going to leave steel sinks. There was a photolithographic press there, and I could get all of it, but I couldn't afford it. So I made 10 phone calls. The first 10 people that I had taught or worked with, they were all older people. There were a couple of young ones, but some 30, 40, 50, up to 70. And said, you know, you talk about having a studio. There are all these private little areas here for $100 a month and a commitment of 1 year. You can be part of this group. And all 10 said yes.
Well, of course. Why wouldn't they, right?
It was fabulous. And that's how we began. That's how Studio 216, which was the number up there, began. It was very important. And we all agree that it was a time in our lives that will be one of the high spots. And we will never, ever forget what we took from it. It's also a time, there's a time in one of my stories with Janet Collins, there's a time to open a door and there's a time to close a door, like John Groth did at the Art Students League. He closed the door. But what he was really doing for me was I then had to open a new door.
What do you know now about the creative process?
Read my book.
That you didn't know before.
I know the patterns better. I once brought in a huge sheet of paper to the others in the old studio, and I said, it's all about connecting the dots. When you're having a dot in your life or going through a dot, sometimes you don't see it in relation to all the others. I think that's what you're getting at. At some point, you connect them. You remember as a child, connect the dot things, and you think, oh, you don't know what it is? And it turns out to be a cat or a horse or a stone or whatever. I think the book was a physical connecting of the dots. And I decided to call it The Studio Within because I discovered it isn't an external studio. You carry it here. I've lived in many places. I've pulled a lot of U-Hauls in my life. I've said as many goodbyes as hellos to many things. It's here. If you run off to Paris or Portland or wherever and your furniture's not unpacked, it's not going to be unpacked in those places either. You may have experiences that help you to keep growing, of course. But I think that's what I feel. Where do I go with it? I think I'm in the process of a sigh. It surprised me that I like writing these little stories. I still keep thinking, well, you should write something different, maybe something that maybe some of the structures of your classes and things you did that people enjoyed. But that's like going back to dental school. I don't really want to do that. I want to write these tiny little prose poem stories. To me, the idea of taking an experience in your life, an episode, and pulling it together into a page or two, and also not using it to exercise your demons. So much of what I come across has to do with someone going on and on about awful things they've been involved in, drugs, promiscuity, alcohol, whatever it is. And for some reason, they seem to be very popular. I mean, I see many of them when I look in the bookstores. I don't want to do that. And I think the challenge right now to me is how can I take episodes from my life and transcribe them in such a way that a reader will will put them all, well, how can I put this? A reader will live them through their own life and not get stuck that, oh, well, this is good or not good, but this is Ted. And I also do that in my painting. I think I couldn't think that in my writing had I not come to that in my painting. That even with titles, I want to do something that is a window for someone who comes in and says, well, you may call it Wave on a Shore, but that's not what I get from it, and I'm taking it away from you, and I'm going to live with it. I would like to write like that. Will I be able to? I have no idea, but it doesn't matter.
I'm Suzanne LeGrand, today talking to Ted Katz, author of The Studio Within. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Writers on Craft.